Okay, welcome back. When this nightmare, this COVID planned, created, and deployed nightmare began to manifest, I think I first began to pay attention to it in the late summer of 2019, maybe August, September, maybe about this time. Hearing stories coming out of China, you all remember that, most of you do, about this new illness that was unknown, et cetera. Then it went into the bat configuration, and then it went on from there to where we all had to get, what? Get tested. Remember the tests? I have always felt that because I knew, and many of you knew, that this was a plandemic, that they would never miss an opportunity to gain entry into the physical body of hundreds of millions of people with a test swab. Why would they miss that opportunity? It's one thing to get people scared enough to where they roll up their sleeves, right? Okay, we get that. It's another to infect them with the bioweapon virus itself. We got that. But if you're going to be able to gain literal access, internal access to the human body with a swab, and we have renamed the swab in terms of honoring Klaus Schwab, with the swab actually being thrust into the mucous membrane cavity of the human sinus, why would you miss that? Well, we're going to take a look at that proposition this hour. Lots ahead. Hello there, young lady.
Hello.
How you been?
Oh, okay.
Oh, let's do better than that. Come on.
Well,
you act like somebody
together.
Who's... Say that again?
I'm holding it together.
Well, this is someone whose neighbors are trying to burn her out right now with...
Yeah, somebody's got a fire pit going, and the air's very still, so it's just wafting in this direction.
Close your windows.
Well, if I do that, then I'm locked in with the smoke.
Yeah, you got to get some fans and open the rear windows then.
No,
I don't
know. The fan's
know.
Going.
That's really disgusting. It is. That's not good.
Well, we don't have restrictions on burning here.
Really?
No.
Oh,
no.
Interesting.
No.
With all that...
Burn all you want.
Huh. You got a lot of nature around you that could light off, I would think.
Well, we get enough rain that it generally isn't that much of a concern.
Yeah. Well, we had a few drops last night here. I'll tell you, Oregon used to be a much wetter state. It has changed. That's my take on it anyway. All right, here we are. We are in our fourth year of trying to help all of us understand this better, and we put material out there three times a week for you to use any way you choose to make decisions on which your life may depend. So all we can do is put it out there for you. We do the same thing. We consider many, many things and then toss most of it out. So what we present is usually the idea of preventing people from making a mistake. And it's solid information. It's good information. And now Dr. David Martin has really come forth with a blockbuster. This is big. And he was on an interview program with Stevie Kirsch. And let's, Dr. David Martin, we're going to listen to a bit of this, and it is really important. You're going to be stunned. I'm not going to give you a spoiler here to ruin it, so we'll let you listen. But you don't want to miss this. You want to set this up, Annie?
No, go ahead.
Tell
him
about David. Yeah, well, we could do that. But we should mention, for those who don't know, David Martin has always been a sterling voice in an environment of hustlers and hucksters and opportunists and all that. Very serious, very intelligent, very articulate man. And we have a lot of respect for him. He's a good one. So let's take a listen here. You all set?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. This is Steve Kirsch interviewing Dr. David Martin. All right, and we're going to start with David Martin. He's going to jump in about midway. He's going to talk about the whys and wherefores of the actual release of this deadly bioweapon. Two parts to it. Here we go.
Yeah, so let's unpack two pieces of that question. First of all, why would you do it? Well, the answer is a simple answer. In September 18th, 2019, the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board of the World Health Organization, which is constituted of the Wellcome Trust, the Gates Foundation, NIAID, China's CDC, and a number of other organizations, on September 18th, 2019, in the publication A World at Risk on page 8, they published that there would be, and I'm quoting, an accidental or intentional release of a lethal respiratory pathogen so that by September 2020, the world accepted a universal vaccine platform. That is directly from September 18th, 2019. And they used the term, Steve, a lethal respiratory pathogen. They didn't use the term, maybe it might make people sick. They used the term lethal respiratory pathogen. That's premeditated murder.
But why are you, like people who are engaged in premeditated murder don't publish their plans and in the peer-reviewed literature or anywhere
actually,
else?
Actually, ironically, they do. If you go,
I was just going to say the same thing. Of course they do. How many times have we discussed how they give us advanced warning? Call it predictive programming. I don't care what you call it. But they have to tell us in advance, seems to be what a lot of people believe, the way this evil mechanism works. And they certainly do tell us in advance.
Back to the eugenics office that started at Carnegie in 1913 and continues to this day at Cold Spring Harbor Labs, the answer is yes, they do. That's the weird thing. We, in an organized fashion, have a hard time accepting that there may be people who actually think the world needs to be depopulated. They think that the world has too many people. But listen to the number of times where you hear somebody callously say, like they published in 2011 when they talked about the decade of the vaccines, where they said that they would achieve a 10% reduction in the global population by virtue of having a universal vaccine platform. Now, ask yourself a very simple question. You and I can sit here, and as rational human actors, we can sit there saying, I can't fathom. I simply cannot fathom a world where you can look at another human being and say, you should be dead. I can't wrap my head around that because I'm not a sociopath.
Okay.
Equally, I'm not capable of believing in a scarcity-based world that says that the carrying capacity of humans on Earth is 500 million or whatever number they come up with. Because I don't know who is authorized to make the determination on the 7.5 billion people that have to be eradicated so that we have the comfortable carrying capacity of Earth.
That is a classy, classic statement. Very straight to the point, and that's David Martin at his best. He's superb.
I'm not living in a world where I do that. So what's happened, and you're having this question emerge, like any rational person would, doesn't it seem odd that any person would promote a strategy that says that depopulation is actually an acceptable, proactive way of treating humanity?
And don't forget that Bill Gates came from a eugenics family. William Gates Senior, the old man, was an absolute, he would get on the mountaintops and scream eugenics. He loved eugenics. And
yeah.
Billy Jr. was exposed to that his whole life. So don't think for a moment that he's not a eugenicist. He is.
Answer is, you, because you have a moral and ethical compass, I, because I have a moral and ethical compass, have a hard time wrapping our heads around that. But if you listen, and this is where you have to just accept that maybe there is a sociopathic tendency where it's an acceptable loss to get rid of a half a billion people. And we have a hard time. This is one of those things where, you know, we have a hard time doing the calculus that involves the moral justification for that. But I just recently, as of yesterday, heard a healthcare practitioner lamenting that more people didn't die of COVID because if more people had been dead bodies on the streets, more of those vaccine hesitancy people would have been able to be shut up. I couldn't fathom the logic. This is a trained healthcare professional who actually said it was unfortunate that the kill rate wasn't higher. So there's this morality piece of your question, which is interesting, but let's get to the second piece, which is distribution. There's an operative term in what was published as the intent of this campaign, and the operative term was release. An accidental or intentional release of a lethal respiratory pathogen. This was not a leak. You wouldn't use the term release in September. Moderna would not amend four of their patent applications in April of 2019, where they actually made reference to a release of a respiratory pathogen. A release means you actually intend to distribute it. It doesn't mean it leaked.
And the other word is deployed. We can never stray from the reality of this catastrophe, because this was conceived, constructed, created, and deployed by evil, pure satanic evil on this planet. Who can wrap its psychopathic mind around the idea of killing 7.5 billion people? These are sociopaths, psychopaths. This is evil incarnate.
So how do you do it? Well, it becomes very simple. If you go back to the Columbia University 2011 publication and look at where allegedly we have these zoonotic transfer risk locations, giant shock. COVID happened to co-occur at every place that Columbia University said there was a high risk of zoonotic transfer. Now, I don't know how many bats you know, Steve, but if you were to identify the prevalence of bat populations and you were to tell me that Seattle, Washington and New York State were high risk bat populations, where if you actually look at the population of bats in the United States, you see that the Pacific Southwest and the desert Southwest is where you have the high densities of these populations. Why is it that Seattle, which happened to be where COVID broke out first, and New York, where COVID broke out first, why is it that nature happened to match a Columbia University scatterplot of where allegedly zoonotic transfer risks were highest in 2011? And if you're dumb enough to believe that nature read that article and in its infinite wisdom decided to disseminate SARS-CoV-2 to bat populations in every one of those locations, then you're simply absolutely irrecoverably stupid, because nature didn't do that. The fact is that every population that we actually had and every population where we saw an outbreak happened to match a 2011 map of where the outbreak was going to happen.
That's just coincidence, David.
Entirely coincidence, because there's so many roving, marauding bat populations.
Yes.
Exactly right.
And it probably happened exactly the same time, right?
It's amazing how it happened. It all sequenced. The memo went out to the bats, mutate, and instantaneously the Columbia Network bats all mutated simultaneously.
Yeah. There was an email that was sent out.
See what this is. Exactly. And this is proof of quantum entanglement. Because what we really see is the co-emergence of the same manipulation of the same strand of cDNA happening in bats, because what happened in a wet market in Wuhan co-entangled across the universe so that every single bat that went infectable all happened to do it at the same time. It was amazing.
He's obviously being facetious, in case you might have missed it, but this is a little humor. This is a very, very dangerous and dark story, and it's only getting worse. Just stay tuned. Wait till you see what's coming up.
How sequence and nature backed into our published plans.
Well, okay, so it would be even more amazing if the genetic sequence of these viruses in these locations was exactly the same.
Amazing how the phenotypic genetic expression actually showed us that we all had the China virus at the same time.
So this is just a coincidence then, David. This is just a freak of nature coincidence, right?
And the fact that it's one-for-one overlap of a Columbia University map is just the convenience of foresight at a quantum level.
They were extremely accurate in their predictions. It's maybe one of the best papers published of all time.
Exactly.
Because it actually predicted exactly what was going to happen.
Amazing, amazing, amazing how that happens.
Researchers should get the Nobel Prize for their prediction.
Absolutely. Yep. Don't ever doubt the weather forecaster again.
Okay.
Now that's a good line. Don't ever doubt your weather forecaster again. They're talking about the facetiousness again of this entire issue that they're discussing. It's just they're having a little fun with it. Any comments so far?
Well, yeah, if you remember in the beginning, they wanted us to believe that this, you know, came out of some bat population spontaneously and then began to spread worldwide.
Well, it was from that. What was that mammal, that small mammal that they claimed was also
potentially?
The civets? Civet? Yeah.
Civet.
Okay.
Well, there was the civet and...
There's another one. I'll think of it.
Was it the anteater? A pangolin.
Something like... Some pangolin, that's it. Yeah. All right. Well, they did. They tried to con us and steer us down the cul-de-sac to nowhere with bats and pangolins and wet market crap and leeks. And no, 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 never. And for those of you who are smart enough to figure that out, at least intuitively back then, you understand. And it is kind of funny to hear David Martin talk about quantum entanglement. That's good satire. All right, here we go.
What is the alternate hypothesis then, since we know it was just coincidence that these natural events just happened to happen at the same time? What do you think was the alternative hypothesis that maybe would be put forward by conspiracy theorists that...
Yeah.
In other words, he's asking him, what's the truth? How do you see it, really?
You know, said something else happened. Like, what is the alternative?
Is somebody going
around with a suitcase and going to these spots and, you know, like, what? How does someone spread that?
Yeah, well, so for some reason, people seem to forget that despite the fact that every laboratory is operated under good clinical manufacturing practice, or GCMP, somehow or another, people seem to forget that in the spring of 2020, the CDC was shipping what they've called contaminated swabs. Now,
the CDC, our CDC, was shipping what they called contaminated swabs. Contaminated with what?
Right.
Remember what I suggested to you in the beginning. Here they have, this is all planned. They know they're going to panic the people. They know they're going to force test people. They're going to gain access to their internal mucous membranes inside their head. And you think that they're not going to take advantage of that? Here we go. I'm going to back that up just a little bit. Okay.
Practice, or GCMP. Somehow or another, people seem to forget that in the spring of 2020, the CDC was shipping what they called contaminated swabs. Now, I don't know about you, Steve, but I find it fascinating that you would manufacture test swabs in an environment where you actually happen to have an unidentified virus that was allegedly the thing you were going to test. How on earth you got contaminated swabs into circulation, and by the way, CDC got caught distributing them, right? This was not a preemptive catch. This was actually other people finding that the swabs were contaminated. I have said from the beginning of this thing that in the 2016 and 2017 DARPA funding budget, they actually funded two companies that actually had the ability to, are you ready for this, produce contaminated swabs for the purpose of distributing biologic agents. It's a PCR.
Got that? I'm going to play that again. I want you to hear that. Hold on.
Swabs. Now, well, so for some reason, people seem to forget that despite the fact that every laboratory is operated under good clinical manufacturing practice, or GCMP, somehow or another, people seem to forget that in the spring of 2020, the CDC was shipping what they called contaminated swabs. Now, I don't know about you, Steve, but I find it fascinating that you would manufacture test swabs in an environment where you actually happen to have an unidentified virus that was allegedly the thing you were going to test. How on earth you got contaminated swabs into circulation? And by the way, CDC got caught distributing them, right? This was not a preemptive catch. This was actually other people finding that the swabs were contaminated. I have said from the beginning of this thing that in the 2016 and 2017 DARPA funding budget, they actually funded two companies that actually had the ability to, are you ready for this, produce contaminated swabs for the purpose of distributing biologic agents.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Is there a possibility that there was not a distribution of airborne particulates through unmasked heathens like myself sneezing in choirs? Is it possible that rushing people to PCR tests was the way we actually distributed the pathogen? And I would suggest to you, given the fact that the evidence was they got caught doing it, it would be a fairly plausible argument that says that this was, are you ready for this, accidentally or intentionally released. See, here's the problem. We were supposed to have people sneezing on cruise ships and then coming into contamination. But what we don't talk about was the populations of the cruise ships that mysteriously didn't get infected. We didn't talk about the populations in Seattle in nursing homes that didn't get infected. If this thing was an aerosolized airborne distribution pathogen, we would have had extreme infection rates in the populations where it first showed up. But the tiny problem we have with the actual data is that the data says it's not overly transmissible. But here's the reason why that's important. The 2002 patent filed by Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which actually is the first gain-of-function patent filed on coronavirus, 2002, was, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone. Now, what does that mean? That means that you can actually make somebody sick with this thing, but that person who is sick doesn't pass it to the next person. That's what replication defective means.
Now, remember, he's talking about the original bioweapon COVID virus, gain of function produced, Ralph Baric involved, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, etc., Wuhan. He's talking about that virus. He's not talking about shedding of spike protein and mRNA from the injections. Don't get confused.
Correct. Yep.
All right? He's just talking about the original virus not being as, well, like wildfire, spreading among the masses, that maybe in the beginning the virus was being also seeded with swabs.
I wouldn't say swabs. Back in late 2019 when people were coming down with this thing.
Oh, you go back that far, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I mean, my contention is that it was probably seeded with that year's flu shots.
Why not? You got access again, remember. You got access. People
and there were a lot
shots.
Of people that got a flu shot during that time that were unusually ill afterwards.
Yep, correct. That was a bad flu, so to speak. Very good.
Yeah.
So again, we have DARPA patents proving that swabs could be made to be carriers of infectious biological agents. And people were also looking at these swabs early on and finding out, and there were videos about this, that there were little, tiny, visible black fibers, we'll call it, in these white cotton swabs. And they found, with high magnification video recording, that if those black fibers in that white cotton was exposed to heat and moisture, as in exhalation, they began to move. The little black fibers began to move. No, they weren't being blown around. They were moving. Highly suggestive of something in there that shouldn't be in there. Now, that was common. That was around. You could find the videos back then. I don't know if you still can or not.
Well, you could even find that type of thing in some of the cheaply made masks.
I've heard that, too. Yeah.
So, you know, none of this stuff was manufactured to any real standard with oversight.
Except if they were manufacturing it to the standard of intentionally
right.
loading it up with these terrible pathogens. All right, here.
Now, this emergency use authorization gave them a license to just
kill.
Do whatever they want.
License to kill.
Yep.
Here comes the problem. If we look at populations where everybody loves to tell me, but my grandmother died, or my aunt died, or my uncle died, or I got really sick, or somebody else got really sick, the answer that we stop asking is, okay, and they infected how many others? Because here's the irony, Steve, inside of households, forget larger populations, inside of households you had a parent that got sick, but the other parent and the other children never got sick. Inside of communities, you had the same phenomenon happening. And lo and behold, what you start seeing is the incidence of alleged illness coinciding with the incidence of testing, which is the reason why I would suggest to you that the evidence, this is not my hypothesis, the evidence says that at least many of the cases are likely cases that were distributed by contaminated swabs. Why do I say that? Because they actually had contaminated swabs. That's why I say it. I'm not making something up. This is torn right out of the pages of the evidence. And unfortunately, people sit back and say, oh, yeah, but I didn't get a PCR test and I got sick. Well, here's an interesting thing. Influenza still happened. We didn't have a higher incidence of influenza in 2018 versus 2020. In fact, it was almost identical. But the spike of alleged illness around COVID co-occurs with the institution of the PCR test.
And remember, the PCR test came after the swab was pushed up your nose. Sometimes all the way back to up against that little thin bony plate that separates your sinus from your brain. And tell them about some of these people who are having cerebral spinal fluid, CFS, leaking right out of their nose after being tested with these swabs.
Well, some of the people administering that test were not well trained in how to perform it, and they did it rather crudely, and in some cases ended up puncturing that cribriform plate.
Incredible.
And some people did develop a cerebral spinal fluid leak, which is not easily repaired.
No, you can't go in there and weld it shut. Once you bash through to the brain, you got a problem. This is crazy. All right.
And then we had that other woman that we played, last week sometime, that was required to do these home tests, and she ended up getting some kind of infection with those swabs, and they didn't have to go all the way back. You just, the innards inside of each nostril was sufficient, but nevertheless, whatever was on that has caused her quite a bit of issues.
Now, remember, we're talking about the bioweapon virus here, back in 2019, 2020, especially. All right, here's David Martin.
Part about this, Steve, is that the vast majority of early PCR tests were asymptomatic, which leads us to a tiny problem. Under the legal definition of COVID, COVID was defined as 11 symptoms. None of those symptoms included the existence of a pathogen. All of those symptoms were actually subjective symptoms about fever and runny nose and pulmonary problems and things like that. Ironically, the test, which was the PCR test that we allegedly were using to find SARS-CoV-2, unfortunately created the illusion of what we called asymptomatic spreaders of COVID. Well, here's the tiny problem. There is no person on earth that can be an asymptomatic spreader of a thing that can only exist by symptom definition. It's technically, legally, and absolutely impossible. There's no such thing as an asymptomatic COVID carrier because COVID is nothing but symptoms as defined by the legal statutes. So here's a tiny little problem. We were told that COVID was caused by SARS-CoV-2. Tiny problem. That wasn't part of the COVID diagnosis. The differential diagnosis was symptom only. So what did we do? We invent this idea of asymptomatic spread, but the problem is tons of people had allegedly positive tests for SARS-CoV-2 and had no symptoms, meaning that the causal statement fails, prima facie. And as the causal statement fails prima facie, one can only conclude that a respiratory pathogen that had lethal tendencies was distributed by the perpetrators, not passed through the population.
Okay.
Okay. What do you want to put out on the table here to help amplify this? This is, again, I just want to repeat, this is about the actual virus. This is the bioweapon virus. We're not talking about shedding here after being vaxxed. That's not on the table right
now.
Well,
I would say what he has stated is consistent with what I observed early on. I knew of probably four people very early on, late 2019, early 2020, who were quite sick with this thing, to the point where they couldn't breathe. They did end up going into the hospital. But nobody in their family got it. So, you know, which is odd. If it was supposed to be so contagious, you know, why wasn't the entire family or the partner infected? And in every case, they weren't. And then I also know of somebody who was asymptomatic, perfectly healthy, was required to get a PCR test for something, and got the test. The next day they told her it's positive, you need to quarantine, and then she began coming down with symptoms, like, you know, within a day of the test or so. Coincidence? So that does line up with his statements.
I agree. Okay, let's go back. This is, again, Dr. David Martin.
So, let me test that hypothesis, just to be, you know, we want to make sure we're not missing anything. So,
yeah.
If what you're saying is true, then certainly somebody got a bunch of swabs and they took them out of checked them out of, you know, wherever they got them. And they tested the swabs, and they did whole genome sequencing on the swabs and found the virus is on the swabs. And so here's the other question, which is, can the virus actually exist on those swabs? And even if it can exist on those swabs, can it then be, you know, is there proof that you can take these contaminated swabs, twirl it in someone's nose both times, and cause that person to then be infected with the virus? Because the claim is that if you desiccate these things, that they die. And so so these are all sorts of ways of, you know, sort of shooting holes in what you just said. So I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. So we.
Great question. Okay. Great question. And given the fact that I will now have another, 10,000 trolls that will tell me Dave Martin is advocating a viral model versus a terrain model because Tom Cowan said so. Let's be very clear on the fact. What I have been very clear on is that like the PCR test does not test for an intact virus. So let's be very clear. What we do is we test for fragments of nucleic acid sequences. That's what we test for. That's all we test for. And so what I'm saying very precisely is that the things we tested for, which are the spike protein encoding sequences, the things that actually help make the spike protein trigger its production inside of the human cell line, that which is what we tested for and that which is what was on swabs was confirmed to be on swabs that were sent out from the CDC. So we do know that the swabs had the agent on it, were tested positive for the agent, and had to be recalled. That's a published fact. So how many of those?
That's convincing.
Yeah. How many of those?
Who did that study, by the way?
The CDC was the one that officially retracted the shipments.
Right, but who did the study to say that we tested the CDC swabs and they tested PCR positive?
Well, a number of labs were the ones that reported the contamination, but the CDC was the one that published it. They published the contamination of their own swabs.
So, right. So they could say, oh, accident happened. Sorry about that. But can you?
That's where the story falls apart, Steve, because GCMP. So the FDA and I did a lot of this work back when I was in the medical school at the University of Virginia. The FDA does not allow what's called good clinical manufacturing practice to have a sterile production of a test environment in which in the same environment you have the active pathogen you're going to test. That would be like saying I'm going to make an Ebola Band-Aid to put on Band-Aid sores. But I'm going to go ahead and manufacture with Ebola.
Did they ever investigate how this happened?
Oh, that's where the story ended. No, the story ended with we had contaminated swabs. Oops, we're going to recall them.
Sorry. So they don't even go in and explain how this could have happened?
No.
No, really?
No. This is absolutely a BS. Yeah, but this is a BS story where they come up with the, oops, we found contaminated swabs. We're sorry. Our bad. We're going to recall those. But here's the problem. They did not then institute any process by which any of these things were then put into GCMP monitoring. So we have zero. Throughout the entire pandemic, we have zero data on whether or not the swabs were contaminated or not.
Okay.
That's pretty grim to hear that. Unbelievable, really. Again, they're not going to miss an opportunity like that. No, not going to happen. Yeah. And what we have now with shedding, several have said on this program by way of video that there's no question but that spike and mRNA are being shed. So how lucky do you feel? How many variants of the virus has there been registered now? I don't even know.
Well, you should play a little more because he gets into that.
Okay, very good. All right, if you just joined us, Steve Kirsch interviewing Dr. David Martin, and the idea that DARPA, a couple of patents, were they patents? I guess they were patents. Papers.
Well, they funded studies to look at that.
Right.
Well, they contracted two companies to come up with a way to produce swabs that had a biological agent on them.
Incredible. And just to dry out or desiccate a virus that apparently doesn't all hold true anymore in terms of a definite, guaranteed 100% way to kill them. Something else was done to keep this synthetically created laboratory-made virus intact and functional on the swabs.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
what about the, did somebody take these contaminated swabs and swab someone who didn't have COVID and cause them to get COVID?
No question.
They did that.
They were no question. In fact, the only way you can get the case counts that you get, where you actually get a positive PCR test and a symptom, is from a contaminated swab, in my humble opinion.
Okay. So this Tom Cowan's not going to be happy with you.
Well, Tom Cowan hates the fact that I actually have been precise in stating that in 2002, Ralph Baric used the model of coronavirus and created a chimera.
Tom Cowan is one of the several people who have been out in the front of pushing this idea that there are no such things as viruses on planet Earth. All right, that's the inside joke there.
And that chimera, by 2005, he actually announced at the DARPA conference, sponsored by DARPA and MITRE, he announced that that was going to be a biowarfare-enabling technology. His words, not mine. He actually stated that in his presentation. Now, what Tom Cowan never listens to, and what I have always said, is that I'm not saying a virus causes anything. What I am saying is a protein toxin derived from a viral model has killed people, because it has.
This is very important. A protein may be the actual functional mode of transmission from a virus. Now, Erica has said this on the program a number of times, going way back. Proteins may now be the killer organism. It may not be a full virus. No virus needed. If you've got a protein that's going to deliver a message to the host, the new host, that can infect it, infest it, and ultimately kill it, you got a whole new world of trouble to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. All you need is the protein. You don't need a replicating virus. You know, and depending on how that protein interacts with, number one, your immune system, how does your immune system see it? Is it going to react to it? Or, you know, how disruptive can this protein be in terms of, is it going to interfere with your cell's ability to produce proteins? You know, an example would be something like ricin. I mean, ricin could shut down protein production and kill you in very, very small amounts. But proteins can do all kinds of damage, as we're seeing with this spike protein, and sometimes just fragments of that protein. And the spike protein itself has many different fragments that are toxic.
Right. Yep. All right. I'm going to play that last little bit again, then we'll listen a little bit more.
Five, he actually announced at the DARPA conference, sponsored by DARPA and MITRE, he announced that that was going to be a biowarfare-enabling technology. His words, not mine. He actually stated that in his presentation. Now, what Tom Cowan never listens to, and what I have always said, is that I'm not saying a virus causes anything. What I am saying,
here's the punchline,
is a protein toxin derived from a viral model has killed people, because it has. That's no different than saying a snake bite can kill people. That's not different from saying a introduction of a conotoxin can kill a person. The fact of the matter is, human beings can have lethal reactions to the introduction of foreign proteins. And I know that there are people who are inside of that, you know, virus model debate who actually have a hard time accepting that. But all you have to do is go to the Philippines and see fishermen wading in ankle-deep water and watch what happens when a neurotoxin is injected from a little shellfish and 30 seconds later the person's dead. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that there aren't all kinds of confounding variables in every human interaction with every foreign object, but what I am very precise in saying is that Ralph Baric's gain-of-function research on the coronavirus model is what gave rise to a lethal spike protein cDNA and mRNA sequence that has, in fact, made people sick and killed people.
Well, so do you would you agree with the virologist that this is a virus?
Well, I would agree that the thing that made people sick is actually a modification, which is actually not the traditional definition of a virus. And that is because, once again, go back. Ralph Baric said it's infectious replication defective. But here's the problem. Under the definition of virology, a virus is a replicating organism.
Yeah.
Okay?
But his wasn't replication.
His was replication defective, meaning...
What, did you believe that?
Well, yeah, because I actually know what he actually built. What he built was a protein receptor-sensitive target that used the viral packet to introduce RNA or cDNA into the cell, but that doesn't mean that it acts like the traditional definition of a virus that does the replication, that does the advancement, that does the mutation, and ultimately goes on, which is the reason why every one of these BS variants happened en masse. Steve, variants don't happen en masse. Variants in a replication model are actually going to be as diverse as the population that they're exposed to. But that's not what happened in COVID. Everybody suddenly got this new variant, and then everybody got this new variant. And you sit back and go, well, hold on a minute. How did everybody mutate the same way? Well, that's ludicrous. If virology, the classic definition science, was at play, we would not have had phase shifts of variants where suddenly one variant globally erased the other variant. That doesn't happen in a naturally occurring mutating environment. That's the reason why I said that these were introduced and these were distributed, not translated from an infected person to another infected person. There is no evidence, by the way, zero. Nobody's been able to have evidence, and this is where Tom Cowan and I vigorously agree. No one has actually been able to show that a person with a identified full strand infected another person with the exact same strand. In fact, China tried to show this. They tried to show it in the face mask study, where they tried to show that somehow or another these things were transmitted inside of families and inside of small social networks. And the answer was not a single phenotypic match occurred inside of the same alleged infected family.
Okay, we're going to pause it there, and we'll put the link up under our names a little later on so you can watch it. I'll put the time where we started tonight listening, and you can go back and review this. This is blue chip information from David Martin.
Yeah,
and it does, it certainly proves the concept of mass access to human beings being tainted and loaded with trouble, i.e. the nasal swabs.
And any other injections that people are receiving now.
Any.
And so that, you know, is in sync with what those Japanese researchers had published, a year ago now, that every variant, every named variant out there was created artificially. They did not occur naturally. It didn't arise spontaneously within these populations. Because you would definitely see variations across populations.
Right.
You know, the genetic drift and the... What am I trying to say? But no, everything about it smacks of being orchestrated and synthesized and
controlled all the way.
And controlled.
To chance. No. He mentioned? Go ahead.
No, you go.
Phase shifting. Is that important in this issue?
Well, it's this idea that you're going to have this drift, this antigenic drift. That would happen when there's a replicating virus within a host or a population, because they would vie for or outcompete each other
competition.
For the
yeah
Yeah, and you would end up with something that's relatively stable within a population, but you're not going to have the same virus in China as you have here.
No, got it. Well, this,
at the same time.
Looking at this piece of information we've just been able to present, and the idea that the finger is now clearly pointing at Schwab's as being a primary vector of contamination and infection in people. There's been some real evil at work with this thing when you think about that. It's really stunning. I have never allowed anyone to test me. I knew, and Erica's the same, we knew intuitively in the beginning this was not something to mess with in any way. It was too unknown. It was too random. And now we know that there was no random in terms of the Schwabs. They use the Schwabs. This is really a stunning revelation. It's proof.
Well, you know, two things alerted me in the beginning with these things. I mean, number one was the PCR. I could not believe that they were using this as a diagnostic.
Right.
You know, particularly in the absence of symptoms. I mean, the PCR is a nice tool if you're really struggling to come up with a diagnosis. Somebody has symptoms, they're sick, you're not quite sure what it could be. The PCR could be a tool to help you arrive at a diagnosis, but it should never be used on its own, and it should never be used as a diagnostic, you know, in the absence of symptoms.
Right.
And then the other thing was, well, you know, why this 6-inch bottle brush going way into somebody's head?
They were anything but soft, some of them. They were abrasive.
Yeah.
And obviously designed to deliver something.
Even if they weren't contaminated, let's just say they were sterile.
Even if they weren't, you're still ripping up skin and causing
minor
bleeding.
And you have
bleeding.
Any number of pathogens,
right.
Microbes that are
right
harboring within your nasal cavity. You know, you've got a protective barrier there, and as long as that
Why
isn't
rip
breached,
it up?
You should be fine.
This is crazy.
Right.
This is crazy. All right. I hope this is all understood. If it's not understood, please go listen to it again. And keep in mind that when we talk about the idea of proteins being so small, they're way smaller than a virus, and they'll go right through your skin if you grab a shopping cart handle with your bare hands and someone is shedding spike protein, it could go right through your skin. I'm not trying to scare anyone. This is not alarmist.
No, I can vouch for that because I know people who are extremely sensitive now to this protein, and if they touch something that somebody else who is shedding has touched, they can feel it and become sick from it.
It's true.
Look
up the size of proteins. Just say, how big is a protein compared to a virus or a bacteria? Whatever. Just get an idea of how small proteins are, and how the spike goes into your body, and with the mRNA working in tandem, takes your body and turns it into a spike protein production center, just what you don't need. This is incredible what they did with this.
Well,
you know,
if you can leverage proteins, and you know, they're stealth.
Totally. I agree.
And you don't necessarily need a lot, depending on what it's doing and how it's doing it.
No, you don't. Well, that was quite a revelation in terms of solidifying things and making it crystal clear. Some of the tools that were arrayed and are arrayed against us. The obvious suggestion is, don't let anybody test you. Don't anybody.
No,
put anything
I mean,
up
if,
your
it,
nose.
If this comes up again, I don't think it will. I think people are hip to it at this point.
Hopefully.
Although don't forget, we have the CDC just approved, or the FDA just approved the latest booster. They'll be rolling them out today.
I think they both did. Anyway, it's disgusting. It's all.
So there'll be
horrible.
Another round of shedding. Just be aware.
Yeah. And if they roll out with a monkeypox mRNA predicated vaccine, that'll be shedding too. It won't be the same spike protein. It'll be another protein potentially. It could be anything. These people are not playing games.
as far as mRNA for monkeypox goes, that's a ways out. The one that they're using was that Jynneos, which is an attenuated, supposedly replication deficient or defective version of vaccinia.
Right.
And you need two doses, so they say, to be protected. But I'd be less concerned about that shedding because it's not a replication competent virus. But you never know. You never know. I mean, people with impaired immune systems may not be able to.
And that's over 80% of America has impaired immune function right now. Maybe 90 because of shedding. We have to run. We're way beyond time here.
Okay.
But thank you. Excellent job as always. Thanks.
Okay. Likewise. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And we will be back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.